This episode is provided by Thomas Allgaier and Frenis, based on the most relevant LinkedIn posts on health tech in CW 26 and 27. Frenis equips health tech providers with the market intelligence to identify which hospitals to target and how to reach decision makers for hospital digitalization as a result of the Krankenhaus Zukunftsgesetz. You can find more info in the description.
So, welcome everyone to today's deep dive. We got a lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, we are taking a huge stack of curated insights from across the health tech space on LinkedIn, and, well, we're looking at the operational realities on the hospital floor right now.
Right, because we really want to move past the theoretical hype, you know, like, what happens when artificial intelligence and digital health start actually colliding with messy clinical workflows?
And legal liabilities.
Yes, exactly. Legal liabilities and ultimately actual patient care.
Because the industry has officially entered its prove it phase.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we aren't sitting around asking if a language model can pass a medical exam anymore.
No, nobody cares about that anymore.
Right. The only metric that matters now is whether these tools actually function for a clinician who's just, you know, trying to survive a chaotic Tuesday shift.
That is the perfect way to frame it. And the data emerging from the field right now paints a picture of two real extremes.
Mm-hmm.
Take the insights shared by Shez Partovi and Brian Scott regarding the 2026 Philips Future Health Index. On the surface, the adoption signal is massive.
Like, how massive are we talking?
Well, 71% of clinicians report that AI is already improving their workflow efficiency.
Wow.
Yeah, and half of them explicitly say it's increasing their capacity to see more patients. So the technology is genuinely delivering on its core promise of saving time.
And I know there's a, but here there is a massive operational roadblock. Because in that exact same report, a staggering 70% of those clinicians say the training they receive for these AI tools is either completely inadequate or just wildly inconsistent.
Yeah, which is terrifying if you think about it.
It really is. I mean, think about what that actually means on the ground. It's like tossing a surgeon the keys to a Formula One car, right?
Right.
But you're refusing to give them driving lessons. The car is incredibly fast. It has massive potential, but the driver is just terrified of crashing it.
And in healthcare, crashing means patient harm.
Exactly.
That analogy hits the core of the issue. If you don't give the clinician the training to understand the mechanism, like how the model actually weighs variables and arrives at a conclusion, you just can't expect them to confidently integrate it into high-stakes care.
Yeah, you can't.
Which is why implementation science is suddenly the most critical field in health tech right now. It's the whole study of how to actually get humans to use the tools effectively.
Which seems to be something the industry has largely ignored until very recently.
Unfortunately, yes.
Like, Jan Bager shared this highly revealing literature review on AI in healthcare supply chains. They looked at 13 qualifying studies on the topic just to see how AI was optimizing inventory and resources.
And the findings were a huge wake-up call. Out of those 13 studies, zero were deployed in a real functioning hospital.
Wait, zero?
Not a single one.
That's crazy.
Every single study was a simulation running on sanitized data. The authors of that review basically concluded that the bottleneck isn't the algorithmic math, it's the data infrastructure.
Right, because when you move from a clean lab simulation to a real hospital, you hit all these data silos and messy legacy software.
Interoperability walls, all of it.
Yeah.
You have to pilot these systems under real conditions with real dirt on the data before you can actually trust them.
But we are finally seeing people do that hard work, right? The real world implementation.
We are.
Bilal Amateen shared results.
No, they didn't.
They embedded an LLM, you know, a large language model, basically a massive text prediction engine, directly into the electronic health record system at Penda Health.
Right into the EHR.
Right. The digital filing cabinet at the hospital, they put the AI right in the middle of it. And this provided continuous, real-time feedback for over 100 clinicians covering more than 17,000 patients.
And the friction they encountered there proved the exact point Bager was making. The software engineering to build the LLM was just the baseline requirement. The true hurdle was the human-computer interaction.
Like, how do you design an interface that a tired, overworked human will actually trust?
Exactly. And utilize it in real time without it just becoming, you know, another annoying pop-up on their screen that they just click away from.
Yeah, click fatigue is real. And that friction is forcing developers to rethink how they measure success. Asim Khan introduced this concept called the safety-aware ROC framework.
Which is super interesting. Let's pause on ROC for a second because it's usually just a highly technical math term.
Right. It stands for receiver operating characteristic. Usually, an ROC curve is just a graph showing how well a model balances false positives against false negatives. Basically, it tells you how accurate the tool is.
Right. But Kahn argues that accuracy isn't the same as safety. Instead of just looking at standard validation metrics like the area under that curve, developers need to design for operational reality.
Okay, so how do you do that?
Well, Kahn says an AI must be designed for three distinct modes. First, there is rule in safe, where you trust the AI to make a positive call.
Got it.
Second, there is rule out safe, where you trust it to safely dismiss something. But the third mode is what really matters most. The gray zone.
The gray zone. That's where the AI recognizes its own statistical uncertainty, right?
Yes.
It explicitly knows its limitations and defers the decision back to the human clinician. So if you're building medtech right now, your user experience, your monitoring dashboards, your service level agreements, all of it has to account for that gray zone.
Absolutely.
Because if you don't engineer a graceful handoff back to the human, you aren't building a safe product.
And that gray zone limitation is exactly what is driving a massive structural shift in how we build these systems right now. Because a single AI model inherently struggles with complex, real-world gray areas, the industry is moving away from single models toward what people are calling agentic AI.
Oh, right. Nishant Mishra pointed this shift out, and it's a really crucial distinction. Because a traditional AI model analyzes data and gives you an output like summarizing a medical chart.
Right, it's just one action.
But an AI agent can understand context, reason across multiple different systems, and actually execute a multi-step workflow.
Yeah.
So it doesn't just read the chart. It reads the chart, checks the pharmacy inventory, and then drafts a prescription order.
But giving these autonomous agents the power to execute workflows creates a whole new layer of risk, particularly in the development phase.
Oh, for sure.
Dr. Ankit Singh shared a sobering case study from his experience building GenieCare.ai, which is an oncology platform moving toward a regulated medical device classification. He used Claude Code, an AI agent, to help build the software architecture. Then he brought in a completely different agent, OpenAI Codex, to review Claude's work.
And Codex immediately found three major real-world issues that Claude had completely missed, right?
Yes. A navigation bug, a database migration gap, and missing regression tests.
Oh.
If we look at the mechanics of why that happened, it reveals a fundamental flaw in relying on a single AI.
Because it was too close to its own work.
Exactly. Mm. Claude missed those bugs because its process was reactive, and more importantly, it was context blind to its own mistakes. It had just built the architecture, so it had too much historical context. Mm. Codex, however, came in as a second agent with bright eyes and caught the logic gaps immediately.
So the takeaway Dr. Singh arrived at is that having an AI, you know, grade its own homework in regulated medtech is just fundamentally unsafe. You cannot rely on one monolithic agent.
Right. You need multi-agent workflows.
Exactly. Where different specialized AI models proactively peer review each other, exactly the way human engineering teams do. One agent writes the code, a second agent tries to break it, and a third agent verifies the fix.
And that concept, building an ecosystem of specialized agents rather than one monolithic system, is echoing across the entire infrastructure layer of healthcare right now. Alan Pitt highlighted the recent partnership between NVIDIA and Abridge.
Oh, yeah, they're building a healthcare-specific foundation model entirely focused on clinical conversations.
Yeah, and Pitt referred to this as healthcare's app store moment.
I love that phrase, app store moment, because the underlying logic there is fascinating. For decades, hospitals have relied on these massive, monolithic electronic health records.
Mm-hmm. The big legacy systems?
Right, systems from companies like Epic or Cerner that try to do absolutely everything. Usually at a price point most hospitals just struggle to afford. But Pitt is arguing the market is moving toward open, composable infrastructure. You build a secure foundation and then let 1,000 specialized AI agents plug into it, just like apps on a smartphone.
It sounds incredibly efficient on paper. It really does. But Joshua Liu offered a necessary reality check on this entire multi-agent ecosystem.
What's his take?
Well, you can have the most advanced AI infrastructure in the world, capable of building and peer reviewing your digital health tools at light speed. But AI cannot navigate hospital politics.
Oh, right.
It cannot sit in a boardroom and convince a health system executive to fund a department pilot, let alone sustain it into an enterprise-wide rollout.
Yeah, because you can automate the code, but you cannot automate the trust.
Exactly.
Executives need to look a human being in the eye before they sign off on a system that could potentially alter patient care.
Precisely. AI can accelerate the building of digital health, but you still need human-to-human dynamics to actually sell the transformation and manage the change management within a hospital system.
And speaking of human trust, you know, that brings us back to liability.
The big one.
If we are empowering these multi-agent ecosystems to write code, execute workflows, and make clinical suggestions, we run into a massive legal blind spot. Like, if the machine gets it wrong, who actually gets sued?
It really is the elephant in the room for health tech. Jyoti Pandey laid out exactly how this is playing out in dentistry, and it is a complete legal gray area right now.
How so?
So imagine a dentist uses an AI diagnostic tool, follows its advice, and the AI turns out to be wrong. The dentist is fully liable.
Right, because the AI didn't go to dental school.
Exactly, and the dentist signed the final chart.
But, and this is the crazy part, if they override the AI and the AI was actually right, they are still liable.
Yeah.
Because they ignored a logged algorithmic finding that was sitting right in front of them in the medical record. So logically, if you're a first-year clinician, the safest legal move is to just agree with the software.
It becomes a defensive medicine tactic.
Yeah, a defensive tactic. But if they do that, don't they slowly lose their own diagnostic instincts? Like, they just calibrate to the machine's blind spots without ever developing the human intuition to catch what it misses.
You've just described exactly what Benjamin W. Nelson identified as one of the most insidious risks in clinical AI. Nelson researches mental health AI safety, and he divides the risks into two categories, type I and type 2 harms.
Okay, break that in for us.
So type I harms are acute, immediate failures. For example, an AI chatbot completely missing a textual cue that a patient is suicidal. That is what all the industry safety guardrails and ROC metrics are built to catch.
Right. But type 2 harms are much harder to spot, right?
Yeah.
If type I is an acute failure, type 2 must be a systemic degradation.
Exactly. We're talking about the slow de-skilling of the clinician over time.
De-skilling? Wow.
Yeah, it's this creeping harm that emerges over long, multi-turn interactions. No single message or suggestion from the AI looks dangerous in isolation. But over time, the human relies on the machine's reasoning so heavily that they foster a dependence.
They lose their own analytical capabilities.
Right. But Eddie Hernandez is actually trying to engineer a solution against this with a platform called Stillpoint.
Okay, so how does a platform design against human dependence?
Stillpoint is an AI designed strictly to support the therapist, never to replace him or make the final call.
Interesting.
The mechanism is fascinating. The AI tracks the continuity of the therapy sessions, it surfaces historical insights from past conversations, but it forces the human therapist to make the clinical synthesis.
Ah.
As Hernandez phrased it, the architecture is specifically designed to keep the clinician from outsourcing the inside of their own head.
Outsourcing the inside of their own head, that perfectly captures the psychological risk of over-reliance.
It really does.
And it's not just a clinical risk for the individual doctor either. It's a massive enterprise risk for the hospitals themselves.
Definitely.
Seth Jeremy Katz highlighted a recent incident where an AI vendor breach exposed 1.4 million patients across 7 different health systems.
And the underlying dynamic there is that AI is accelerating the velocity of data processing, which inherently accelerates the risk of a breach.
Right. And health systems cannot outsource the accountability. When an autonomous AI agent starts making decisions, triggering external workflows, and moving data around, and then that vendor gets hacked, the hospital is still left holding the bag in the eyes of the public and the law.
So if the hospitals are holding all this liability, how do the regulators ensure the software is actually safe before it even reaches the hospital server?
It was a huge challenge.
Rudolf Wagner brought up a really pragmatic bottleneck strategy regarding the EU Medical Device Regulation, or EUMDR. The EUMDR is the strict European rulebook dictating what software counts as a safe medical device.
Right.
And right now, Wagner points out there are nearly 100,000 health apps on the market. Regulators just do not have the manpower to audit 100,000 individual software developers.
No, it's impossible.
But under the regulations, app stores like Apple and Google legally act as distributors.
Oh, I see where this is going. So instead of trying to police 100,000 different developers, you just police the 2 toll booths they all have to drive through.
Exactly.
Wagner's arguing regulators should audit the massive platforms hosting the apps, forcing Apple and Google to enforce the EU MDR compliance before an app can even be listed.
It's really the only scalable way to enforce governance. But, you know, while regulators, vendors, and hospital executives sit around debating liability, app store audits, and compliance, we kind of have to look at what the patients are doing.
Yeah, because patients are tired of waiting for the industry to sort out its governance issues. They are bypassing the traditional healthcare system entirely.
And the numbers on this patient bypass are just staggering. Sigrid Burge van Rooijen and Krista Kaupe shared data showing that 200 million people are asking ChatGPT health questions every single week.
Every week.
200 million.
That's incredible. And the context of when those queries are happening is the most telling part. 70% of those conversations are taking place outside of standard clinic hours. And Burge van Rooijen noted that in Europe, the average wait time to see a specialist is 70 days. 70 days.
Which is wild. And the healthcare industry often looks at those 200 million queries and panics. They treat AI chatbots as this dangerous misinformation virus, you know, worrying about AI hallucinations and self-diagnosis.
But people aren't choosing AI over doctors because they think a chatbot is smarter than a specialist.
Exactly.
They are choosing AI because the clinic is closed at 2 a.m. or they simply cannot wait 70 days for a human to answer a basic question. This is a symptom of a massive access drought, not a symptom of patient ignorance.
It is a structural design problem in healthcare. But there is a physical limit to how much of that access problem we can solve just by throwing more digital tools at patients.
True.
Wolfgang Schleifer brought up a vital counterpoint to this. He calls it the tolerability crisis.
What happens when we push too much tech onto the patient? Like, what does that look like?
So think about a post-operative patient recovering at home. We're giving them digital trackers, wearable monitors, virtual portals, automated check-in apps. It's a lot.
Right.
Schleifer warns that this bombardment is actually causing cognitive fatigue. If an app pings a recovering patient with an automated alert about their heart rate, but provides zero clinical context or human reassurance, that digital interface suddenly becomes a source of anxiety.
It becomes a burden, not a benefit.
Exactly. We are hitting the limits of human tolerability for digital monitoring.
Which means the innovation has to evolve. Philip Ratcliffe argued this point perfectly. We have to shift away from these disconnected individual point solutions,
yeah.
You know, an app for this, a wearable for that, and start designing holistic care pathways.
Yeah, you cannot solve fragmented care with another fragmented app.
You just can't. You have to design the technology around the entire patient journey, from the initial screening all the way through treatment and follow-up.
And we're actually seeing that shift toward holistic pathways change the economics of medtech right now. Pankaj Chatrala highlighted an amazing use case in India with the IntelliJoint KNE system. It completely rethinks how you map anatomy for a knee replacement.
How does it work without relying on the, you know, massive traditional infrastructure?
Well, traditionally, you need a preoperative CT scan, extra incisions for tracking pins, and a massive, expensive robotic arm taking up half the operating room.
Right.
The IntelliJoint system replaces all of that with an AI-powered tablet and a microsensor used during the actual incision.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the software maps the joint dynamically in real time. It cuts out the imaging costs, reduces the hardware footprint, and proves that high-precision AI doesn't just belong to massive, heavily capitalized metro hospitals. It really democratizes the precision.
It's a perfect example of evaluating the economics of the entire workflow, not just the hardware itself. Dr. Cyril Vithalani proved this exact point with his data on robotic surgery economics.
This is fascinating.
Because hospital administrators always push back, asking, isn't robotic surgery just vastly more expensive? And Vithalani's answer is, well, it depends entirely on what column of the spreadsheet you're looking at.
Right, because if you only look at the theater bill, the cost of the operating room itself, then yes, the robot costs more. He actually ran the numbers on a sigmoid colectomy. The robotic procedure cost about 60,000 rupees more in the operating room compared to open surgery.
Right.
It was roughly 2.79 lakh versus 2.72 lakh.
But the theater bill isn't the total episode of care. When you zoom out and look at the holistic pathway, the math completely flips. Because of the robotic precision, the patient spent fewer days occupying a hospital bed.
Yes.
They avoided wound infections that cause expensive readmissions. And they returned to work 26 days faster than with open surgery.
That's a huge difference.
It is. When you calculate the total episode cost, the robotic surgery was actually significantly cheaper overall. It was 3.37 lakh compared to 4.79 lakh for the open surgery. It compressed the recovery timeline and reduced downstream complications.
But if a hospital administrator is siloed, only looking at the upfront invoice from that one operating room, they miss the systemic savings entirely.
They miss the big picture.
Right. It all comes back to seeing the interconnected systems, whether that's multi-agent AI workflows, legal liability chains, or holistic patient pathways.
Yeah, we've covered a massive amount of ground today, from the friction of clinical implementation and the rise of agentic ecosystems to the complex legal gray zones and the access droughts driving patients to digital front doors.
We really have. And as you digest all of this, I want to leave you with a final thought experiment based on everything we've discussed today.
Okay, let's hear it.
So we talked about the clinician's fear of trusting the AI and the legal trap of overriding it. As these AI models become deeply, seamlessly embedded into every single step of the care pathway, will we eventually reach a point of mutual legal dependency?
Mutual legal dependency.
Yeah. Think about a future where a doctor isn't legally permitted to diagnose a patient without an AI statistical confirmation, but an AI isn't legally permitted to prescribe a treatment without a human doctor's signature. Both entities entirely dependent on the other to move forward. It is a balance of power that the industry, the regulators, and the hospitals are going to have to define very soon.
That is a profound dynamic to end on, and one that will undoubtedly shape the next decade of health tech. If you enjoyed this episode, new episodes drop every 2 weeks. Also, check out our other editions on ICT and Tech Insights, Defense Tech, Cloud, Digital Products and Services, Artificial Intelligence, and Sustainability in Green ICT. Thank you so much for giving us your time today and for exploring these vital shifts with us. Don't forget to subscribe so you never miss an insight.